All right, welcome to Making the Argument. Before we get started, I have a very important announcement. We have a brand new deal with GoodRanchers.com. That's right. If you go into Good Ranchers and you use promo code Nick and you sign up for one of their subscriptions, you're not only going to get $15 off, but do you remember the old deal where you got 2 pounds of ground beef with each order? Well, we just upped the game. That's right. You can choose top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, or bacon now. Every single order you get on that subscription is going to come with free top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, or bacon. You get to choose which one if you use promo code Nick. And again, $15 off on top of that. That's a savings of $480 in meat by signing up for one of those subscriptions. Not to mention the fact that if you are looking for a gift for someone that is impossible to shop for, you can go on to goodranchers.com and get one of their brand new gift boxes. Now, this is a limited time only offer. It's part of their overall Black Friday special. So go on to goodranchers.com to get more details. Sign up for promo code Nick in order to get that deal, and let's get on with the show. Hi, this is Nick Freitas, and welcome back to Making the Argument. Today, we're going to be discussing critical race theory. And the reason why we're going to be talking about this is because legislation has been passed in various states. You saw it in Illinois, I think it was one of the first states. You just see it now in Virginia with House Bill 1904. You see it with Joe Biden and reinstituting critical race theory training or critical race theory based training with respect to federal employees. Specifically in Virginia, now this has become a condition on whether or not you renew your teacher's license or get your teacher's license in the first place is that you have to go through what they call cultural competence training. And I can guarantee you that when it comes to cultural competence training, or what they've also included in there is African-American history training, which, again, I find it interesting that they didn't include any other race with respect to that training, just African-American history. You can be sure that Candace Owens was not invited to the table to offer her perspective on African-American history, not to mention the fact that it's somewhat problematic to be constantly dissecting history and making history all about a particular race. I think it's perfectly appropriate to talk about the specifics of world history, American history, and talk about how certain races have been either put at a competitive disadvantage, have been enslaved, have been treated poorly under the legal systems for which they've resided. I think you could do that with a wide array of races, and I think all of that would make sense. But when you look at the sort of, again, cultural competency training that we're talking about right now for our teachers, right, which presumably is going to bleed over into the curriculum, if it's not already in the curriculum, as it is in some places, we are talking about critical race theory. We're not talking about just generalized cultural competency that I think any one of us would be able to look at and say, okay, this makes sense. You know, yes, if you're a teacher going into a diverse classroom, if you're new to the area, it makes sense to understand the various worldviews or cultures which are present within the classroom that you're teaching so that you can better convey knowledge in a way that's relevant to them, right? I think all of us can see something like that and think, oh, okay, that makes sense. What's the big deal? And that's the reason why the left is kind of covering over what they're actually trying to do with things like cultural competency, right? Because what are you going to be against cultural competency? But the question is that what they're really after, or is this something different? And again, when you look at critical race theory, this is something very, very different. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to go over some of the core components of critical race theory. We're going to talk about how critical race theory has manifested itself in popular culture and academia. And then we're going to talk about whether or not this is something that you think your teacher should be required to go through in order to educate your child. Because there's a big move right now that quick, we got to open the schools, we got to get our kids back in the schools, right? And I certainly understand the drive for all of that, but I think it's important that parents understand what it is both their teachers and their kids are going to be subjected to once they go back into those schools. So let's go over some of the major points of critical race theory, right? First one is a critique of liberalism. Now, this is not liberalism in the modern political vernacular. We're talking about classical liberalism. So principles of the Enlightenment, the idea of constitutional neutrality, of equality of all individuals, of the idea of rational thought and a logical thought process, critical thinking in order to arrive at conclusions, and rights-based remedies to problems. And what I mean by that is if a particular group has been denied certain rights, well, then the idea is to include that group and to make sure that everybody is treated equally before the law. Right? That's a right-based remedy. Well, they don't like that, right? The critique of liberalism, they think that doesn't go far enough. Ultimately, it means that those ideas, the ideas that we think of with respect to the Enlightenment or with critical thinking in general, those are white ideas, Right? Those are ideas that have come forth through a white power structure that has been designed to oppress other people. So they have a critique of liberalism. They also do a focus on storytelling. And this goes into kind of, again, a postmodernist approach to reality, to where whether or not something happened is based entirely off of the perspective of the person that either experienced it or went through it. Now, again, obviously, there's benefit in storytelling. There's benefits in people sharing their experiences. But someone's perspective on reality is not necessarily reality itself, right? So, but when you take out this idea of objective reality and now everything is just perspective, it's all relative to how someone viewed it. Well, again, that it doesn't mean that it's not important to take into account someone's perspective, but the reason why we share multiple perspectives as a particular issue or an incident or an event is because we want to get to the truth of what actually happened. But if you throw that out and it's just now, once again, we're caught in this power structure, and if someone is now declared an oppressed person, well, then their perception or their experience with a particular incident is now the experience. That is now the reality. And any sort of objective facts, reasoning, or logical thought pattern that you might bring to it, if you're not within that oppressed class, you're not allowed to present that sort of viewpoint as if it has equal validity with the story that's being told. Intersectional theory. This is interesting. This goes with the examination of things like, you know, race, sex, class, national origin. And, you know, sometimes you see this critiqued in conservative circles as you know, like an almost like the Olympics, right? It's okay if you're a black male, you're not as oppressed as a black transgender female. And if you're a black transgender female, maybe you're not as oppressed as a, I don't know, some other minority gay individual, right? So there's all these different things that they take into consideration in order to rank what level of oppression you're falling under. And it goes back to this idea of, you know, how do we organize society and give everyone their appropriate score with respect to how they're oppressed, right? So that's part of intersectional theory. Essentialism versus anti-essentialism, I'm not going to get into that, you know, too much, but it goes to this idea that, you know, obviously when some people talk about the black community, I've always had a problem with that statement simply from the standpoint of whenever you say the black community or the Indian community or the Asian community, you're kind of lumping them all into one large group, and you're not actually accounting for the fact that individuals, families, regions, or whatnot within a particular race or within a particular group might have different experiences. And so it's that idea of what is essential to a group identity versus what is, you know, anti-essential to a group identity. Structural determinism, this goes into the whole idea that there's, the way it's written is it's an exploration of how the structure of legal thought or culture influences its content. Again, I'm not going to get too big on that, but they use it as a way to determine, you know, how the system cannot redress certain kinds of wrongs, that basically certain things are so institutionalized that there's no way to actually fix the institution. You just have to get rid of it and you know, start over. White privilege. White privilege is a core component of this. You see this talked about all the time. It's this idea that, you know, if you're white, you already have built-in privileges that are not afforded to people of color. And that it essentially, you know, there's no getting out of it. And the only way that some people can have the ability to be successful in what they consider to be a white dominated power structure is if they internalize the racism. And this is something where we're going to talk about this a little bit later, because the Museum of African American History had to actually apologize for something that they had put up, but it provides a perfect example of how when you convince someone that, you know, certain principles for living your life, whether it's your work ethic or, you know, critical thought or using the laws of logic or the family structure, right? These are white concepts, and the only way that people of color, according to them, the only way that people of color can essentially thrive within that environment is that they internalize the whiteness of these institutions. And of course, that feeds right into institutional racism. And this is one that's interesting, because when you talk about institutional racism or systematic racism, there definitely are things that you can point to within American history within world history, where you had very specific legal structures that were designed with the express purpose of excluding certain people based off of their race, right? Or based off of their gender, or based off of other criteria, right? So it's not as if institutional racism has never existed. It absolutely has existed. The question is does it still exist? And even if you get rid of all the laws, so if you get rid of every single law which created a disparity or created an inequality within society based off of a legal code, if you get rid of all of that, you still haven't gotten rid of institutional racism, right? You still haven't gotten rid of it. And again, that's somewhat problematic because, you know, where do we go from there? So that's just kind of a quick overview of what critical race theory is. It's based in part off of the Frankfurt School. We're not going to get too into the Frankfurt School, but you should definitely take a look at it. The Frankfurt School was influenced a great deal by Marxist thought. They challenged certain components of Marxist thought, but they viewed everything within critical theory as the idea of power structures based off of economics, right? So you can see the logical connection to Marxism, where Marx treated everybody like, you know, everything's a class war. You know, everybody is essentially an economic entity, and where you fall within the class structure determines whether or not you're oppressed or an oppressor. And the object was to get to a society where you have a classless society. And the only way that they saw that you could do that was by abolishing the private ownership of the means of production. Obviously, that theory worked out real well in places like Cuba, Angola, the Soviet Union, China, Cambodia, etc. All right, so take that theory, that critical theory, when you're talking about society interacting, people interacting with one another, and viewing people almost exclusively as if they're economic entities, and you're either an oppressor or you're oppressed, right? So that was the struggle. That was the struggle that they were trying to address. Well, now take that same generalized line of reasoning and apply it to race or sex, but in this case, you know, specifically race. And you have the same sort of arguments that are coming across. It's this idea that based off of your race, you fall within a particular power structure, and that power structure is either oppressed or oppressor, right? So this is the foundation of a lot of the training that we see going on right now, whether it's in corporate America, whether it's in the federal government, and now within our educational system. And I hope it's fairly obvious why this presents some real problems. I mean, one of the defining characteristics of pre-Enlightenment, Enlightenment, and post-Enlightenment society was this idea of kind of a humanism, not a secular humanism, right? Secular humanism is essentially almost in some respects atheistic, but it was this idea of humanism from the standpoint that every human being has inherent worth. And from a religious worldview, every human being has inherent worth because you're created in the image of God. Right? And so you automatically have worth. You don't got to do anything to get the worth you already get as a human being. It's not based off of what you do. It's not based off of what you say. It's not based off of who your parents are. You just have worth. And so the idea was that we should have a legal structure and really a social structure that respected the worth of individual people and then allowed them to live their lives, make their decisions, and also accept the consequences for their decisions. So it was the high on the individual liberty side. It was also high on the personal responsibility side. Okay, we're just going to tear that down. That is now considered whiteness. And if you don't believe me, let me go ahead and read off a chart that was actually posted at the National Museum of African American History and Culture. Well, like I said, they had to apologize and take this down because I think this is offensive, right? But what it said is they were talking about aspects and assumptions of white culture. Right? Rugged individualism, right? So the individual is the primary unit, self-reliance, independence and autonomy is highly valued. Individuals assume to be control of their environment, family structure, the nuclear family, mother and father, emphasis on scientific method. This one I love. Objective, rational, linear thinking, cause and effect relationships, quantitative emphasis. Right, these were listed as being whiteness, right? These were white concepts of reality. And they talk about the Protestant work ethic. Hard work is the key to success. Work before play. If you don't meet your goals, you didn't work hard enough. So again, it's that whole idea of, you know, you can make your life your own, but it's going to take some work and some effort on your behalf. These are now considered, according to this pamphlet that was posted there, as white concepts. All right. So I want you to think for a second of how damaging that is. Not to mention that in some degree, how racist that is. The people that wrote this, I mean, my gosh, if you would have told me the Ku Klux Klan wrote this, I would have thought, yeah, that probably makes sense. That's a perverse worldview. And since the Klan has a perverse worldview, I have no doubt believing that they would have suggested something as asinine, that work ethic is a white concept. Okay, I've got news for my friends on the left that want to perpetuate this kind of nonsense. Work ethic is not a white concept. It's a race-neutral concept. The idea of working hard and getting to keep what you earn is not a white concept. Individual liberty is not a white concept. Critical thinking, the laws of logic, not white concepts. The scientific method, not a white concept. These are concepts that we recognize through human experience. They are logically consistent. We find that across space and time that when people apply these concepts to their own lives, they realize a certain level of success. That because people have different preferences and make different choices, that even in a fair playing field, even in a level playing field, there will be different results and different outcomes as a result of it. But that people are also empowered to be able to make different choices if they would like to see different concepts or different outcomes. So to chalk that up as that is whiteness, well, then here's my question. What exactly is the alternative? What exactly do you want to teach children, whether they be white children or children of color? What do you want to teach them? The opposite of work ethic? The opposite of the scientific method? Let me get this straight. The same leftists, the same Democrats that are constantly lecturing us on following the science, are they now all guilty of white think? Are they all now guilty of imposing a particular worldview on the rest of society and specifically on people of color? Give me a break. This is the idea that you would take concepts like this and roll it into critical race theory, that you would roll it into cultural competency training, that you would essentially make teachers licensure dependent upon their attendance and presumably their ability to regurgitate and repeat back the talking points from this sort of thinking is dangerous. And it's interesting to me because you had a writer at the New York Times that said that the reason why that the right was trying to ban critical race theory. And again, nobody was trying to ban critical race theory. What President Trump did during his administration was saying that, look, we're not going to continue to make federal employees go through this training because it's clearly biased in a particular direction. They said they want it, conservatives want to ban it because they can't debate it. Really? Well, okay. What was interesting about that article is when it was posted, a number of conservatives came out and said, to include one in particular, said, I will debate anybody you want at the building where the New York Times is housed. We'll even have the debate on your home ground. Guess how many takers? None. Zero. They don't want to debate this. They want to impose this. And they want to impose it in our schools. So that as your child is sitting there in a classroom, they don't want them to be taught that everybody has the ability to succeed. They don't want them to be taught that in order to succeed, you're going to have to work hard. That there are certain things that you can't control in life, but there's a lot of things that you can control, specifically your attitude and response to the challenges that you face. They don't want your kids to be taught that, you know what, everyone in that classroom has equal value as a human being. No, they want your kids to be taught that there's this oppressor and oppressed class structure, which is unavoidable. Right, ultimately, within critical race theory, as far as I've read, and look, I will be happy to be proven wrong if somebody wants to put it in the comments section. As far as I can tell within critical race theory, there is no point where we actually achieve harmony. It's all a struggle. It is a never-ending struggle. No matter what you do, no matter what you say, no matter what institutions are set up, at least within the current structure. Within the current structure of the United States of America, with respect to our culture, with respect to our legal and political institutions, right? They've all got to go. Because according to critical race theory, according to the 1619 Project, it was so rooted in white supremacy, racism, and slavery that apparently we can't take anything positive from it. It's just got to be torn down and replaced. With what? What exactly do you plan to replace it with? Well, if we look at the Frankfurt School, if we look at Marxist theory, and to some degree, if we look at critical race theory, we get a picture of what that sort of society would look like. And apparently, it's not going to rely on science. Apparently, it's not going to rely on objective or critical thinking. It's not going to rely on work ethic. It's not going to rely on the nuclear family as a building block of society. Apparently, it's going to rely on this intersectional component where we break everyone down based off of race, gender, sexual orientation, whatever it is, and then we assign you points. We assign you points, and the higher your score, the more oppressed you are. The lower your score, the more likely you are to be an oppressor. And then this is now just a constant struggle where now a person that never enslaved anyone, never harmed anyone, never did anything wrong. It doesn't matter. Their ancestors did it. And the society that they're living in apparently inculcates it, giving them privileges that they shouldn't have. And so now it's all a question of how are we going to use force to destroy existing infrastructures and redistribute wealth or property in order to, I guess, come up with some more, a more level playing field. But even when you get there, I mean, where do we get now? Because if you're using, you know, any sort of disparity of outcome, right, if one person makes more than another person, right, we certainly can't chalk that up to their own individual work ethic, their creativity, their innovation, their ability to meet the needs of other people. Nope, can't chalk it up to that. It is all has to be as a result of either race or some sort of other intersectional component. And now it's no longer about creating an environment where everyone has the ability to succeed as an individual. No, it's all about collectives. And what sort of intersectional group do you identify with? And what is that intersectional group now entitled to? And how much violence should we use in order to ensure that they get it? Again, if someone says that I'm way off base right here, great. Please leave it in the comments section. Show me where I'm wrong. I would love to see it. Because as I am breaking this out and as I am thinking to myself, what our kids are about to be taught, either subtly or overtly, in college it's more overt, they come right out and say it. In elementary, middle, high school, it seems to be a little bit more subtle. Obviously, if you're requiring teachers to go through all of this, this isn't going to be something where they go through this sort of cultural relevancy training, get their license, go back into the classroom, and then forget it all. There's going to be some expectation that they implement it. There's going to be some expectation that the curriculum reflect what these teachers are now being told. And it would be one thing. It would be one thing if it was, you know what? We're going to teach critical race theory, but then we're going to also teach counter theories. We're also going to look at different ways to look at it. But that's not what's going on. In fact, the moment you challenge something within critical race theory, you're accused of white fragility, right? Because you are so scared of losing your power structure that any sort of critique of that power structure, real or imagined, automatically leads you to take an irrational approach or to just reject it outright, and now they can accuse you of white fragility. I mean, what a convenient worldview. Everything's racist, and the moment you question that everything is racist, it's now proof that everything's racist, and that specifically you're a racist. And even if you come forward and you say, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, I absolutely am, that's not good enough. And that really is the question in all of that. What is good enough? At what point under the objectives of critical race theory, at what point do we get to say, you know what, mission accomplished? I don't know the answer to that question. I really don't. Is there a certain level of revenge that has to take place? Is that what we're after right now? We have to seek revenge on the ancestors, or we have to seek revenge on people whose ancestors did bad things, or whose ancestors didn't believe things that are now in line with modern thinking of certain concepts or topics. Well, I mean, if that's the standard we're using, then there is a there is no end state to that. There is no end point. That can go on in infinity. And maybe that is the goal. Because it turns out there is a ton of money to be made in perpetuating this. There is a ton of money to be made in perpetuating the idea that you are constantly and forever a victim, and that the only way that you can achieve some sort of equity in society or some sort of prosperity is by accumulating political power, tearing down the current structures, and then redistributing whatever's left. Of course, the key question there is, who gets to decide how it's redistributed? Because something tells me the people at the top of the critical race theory pyramid are going to be the ones getting to decide that. Something tells me it's not going to be an equal share, or it's not going to get everybody having a say. It's going to be the people that have the most power within that particular theory determining what society is going to look like. And then here's my question. Once they actually achieve their end state, are they now the oppressors? Is it now the obligation of the new oppressed categories to overthrow them and repeat the process? Again, where does it end? This is not a theory which is pushing us toward greater harmony among people and an environment where opportunity can be pursued by everybody will clearly look different based off of individual preferences, talents, abilities, but it's still there for everybody to be able to pursue, not just as individuals, but in cooperation with other people, whether it be friends, whether it be family, whether it be society at large. But I don't think that's what they're after. And they're certainly not making their money that way. And so here's the thing I would put to all the parents out there that are eager to get your kids back in school. If you were wondering why so many of the ideas, because this isn't a new concept, critical race theory started to gain in prominence in academia within the 1980s. The reason why it is being shoved through now with almost no opposition in so many corporate, government, and educational institutions is because it was allowed to. It started off as, again, kind of this far left-wing, you know, academic ideology. But if you train enough students on it, after a while it becomes normative. This is just the way we think about things now. And if you're not worried about the philosophy that is being taught to your kids at the public school, because if you think it's just going there to learn reading and arithmetic and writing, I'm sorry, that is not the objective of our educational system in many places in this country. It is outright indoctrination. And the reason why I call it indoctrination instead of education is because more and more it is featuring curriculums which do not brook any dissent. The moment you tell me if I disagree with you on a topic, that automatically means I'm racist, or automatically means I'm sexist, or automatically means I'm bigoted. Even if no critique that I have offered would inherently suggest racism, sexism, or bigotry, if you have now just established that because society is racist, any opposition I have to a particular theory is therefore automatically racist, that doesn't leave any room for debate. That's not about achieving harmony or unity, or laying out a logical thought process that all of us can follow in order to arrive at logical and rational conclusions about the truth. That's simply putting people in a particular place, largely based off of things that they either never did or couldn't control, and then punishing or rewarding them for it. I mean, the whole concept behind the American founding was the idea that each individual has certain unalienable rights. Now, we have not always lived up to that. We have not always lived up to that. But what I find fascinating about civil rights leaders like Frederick Douglass, civil rights leaders like Booker T. Washington, Martin Luther King, Susan B. Anthony, is even in those people. They weren't perfect. Nobody is. But when they were appealing for greater equality and opportunity in society, their solution, the solution they offered, was not to tear down everything the United States has been founded on. It was to hold up the concepts found in our Declaration of Independence, the concepts found in the fundamentals of why this country was created in the first place, to hold it up as a mirror to the American people and say, you are not living up to your own philosophy, and you need to. And we were all made better as a result of that. But this new rash, this new group, it is not about achieving greater equality. It is not about achieving greater opportunity for everyone. It is about breaking people down into categories based off of race, based off of gender, based off of sexual orientation, based off of whatever else you want. Oppressed oppressor. You're in one of those categories. And I think it's about time for us to take a hard look. If you are concerned about this sort of ideology, if you look at it right now and you think, my gosh, that is absurd. I am telling you right now, you send your kids to public school and you don't actually sit down and talk with them, or you don't find an alternative to them, within 10 or 15 years, you are going to watch your kids saying things, repeating things that you would have thought was beyond the pale 5 years ago. You're going to see them saying things and advocating for things, accusing you of things as their parents that you would think are completely absurd. It will be mainstream. How do I know that? Because every single component of leftist thought that has now become just an absolute, you know, standard within culture, within society, within Hollywood, within the arts of entertainment, was all tested out first within academia, brought into our schools. And the next thing you know, you had a generation of kids that just thought, this is the way it is. This is the way it is. And if we're not willing to stand up and actually make an argument against what this means for us as individuals, for us as families, for us as a society, then quite frankly, we deserve what we have coming to us. But as frustrating as this is on any number of levels, the people I think it's actually most damaging to are the very people that it is supposedly intended to help, which are minority populations. I mean, what sort of a, quite frankly, sick individual teaches a minority child growing up in the United States that work ethic, the scientific method, the nuclear family, that these things are white? Because the automatic implication there is, if it's white and you're not white, then it doesn't belong to you. Well, I've got news. Working hard, having a family, using the scientific method, that belongs to everybody in this country. And to try to exclude people from that by convincing them that by believing in those things, by implementing them in their own life and achieving success, that they are somehow a race traitor or a gender traitor, that is abhorrent. We should be looking at that with the same disgust that we look at communism, fascism, totalitarianism, authoritarianism. That is the level of disgust we should have on it, because it is setting up entire generations of kids for failure. And it is robbing them of their own history by suggesting that minority communities, people of color, that they don't also have a history of work ethic, that they don't also have a history of building strong families and strong communities and societies, that they don't also have a history of scientific inquiry and freedom of thought. How incredibly offensive. Again, if I didn't know better, I would have thought that that document was written by the Klan. But instead, that is what is being pushed on people. and we need to view it with disgust. We need to view it with anger. And most importantly, we need to come back with a counter narrative that is built upon those foundational principles of individual liberty, personal responsibility, the understanding that no, not everything in life is going to be fair. History certainly isn't fair. Not everyone starts off with the same abilities or opportunities. But our goal should be to teach each individual to make the most out of their opportunities and to help people along the way, especially those that have certain disadvantages that are no fault of their own. But I don't see how you do that when you are constantly pitting one group against another and telling them that good, sound, philosophical principles, ways of thinking about life, are somehow now to be attributed exclusively to skin color. So I would encourage you, take a look at what your kids are actually learning in school. Take that extra time around the dinner table. If you're going to send your children into this environment, you don't get to come back 20 years later and wonder what happened. You either need to look at finding an alternative for it, or you're going to have to invest a significant amount of time combating some of the curriculum, the rhetoric, and the philosophies that are now being pushed on our teachers and on our students. And in no way am I suggesting that the counter narrative is the United States has always gotten it right. In no way am I suggesting that any historical figure, apart from Jesus Christ, is perfect or the ultimate role model for everything you do or think. What I'm suggesting is that we re-embrace those ideals which allow each individual to apply good practices, good critical thinking, which encourage a morality that says that every human being has inherent worth and should be treated with respect, both before the law and socially. But that ultimately, you're the one in control of your life. Not every aspect of your life, there's no such thing. But the things that you do have control over, you will be amazed at what you can accomplish if you stop looking at everybody else as your enemy, if you stop looking at everybody else as privileged, if you stop dissecting culture and community based off of nothing more than skin color or gender, and you really focus on the idea of how can I be the best person I can possibly be, economically, morally, socially? We need to get back to the idea of empowering individuals, because that is what a free society is based on. But if we're going to abandon that for the collective, if we're going to abandon that for this sort of groupthink, if we're going to abandon it for this sort of philosophy and theory, which essentially leaves us in a position where we can never achieve harmony. It is all about conflict and conquest. Well, don't be surprised when you end up with a very violent, a very depressed, and a very impoverished society. And we have to take it upon ourselves as parents, as grandparents, to challenge this thinking. Now, I'm not going to do what the other side does, like what they just did with Dr. Seuss. I'm not suggesting we burn books. I'm not suggesting we ban thought. I'm suggesting we actually show up to the debate. Because I honestly believe that between the two messages that are being pushed right now, one, a collective message, which says your entire identity is based on a group, versus the other message, which says that no, you are an individual and you may be a part of a group, but that group does not define you, nor does the history of that group define you, that you have the capability within yourself to learn as an individual, as part of a family, as part of a group, in order to make good decisions on behalf of yourself, your family, and the group. We had better show up. We had better make the argument. We had better not assume that the philosophy that we all grew up with is still being taught in our schools, because I'm telling you right now, it's going away. It's going away. Your tax dollars are financing it. So you can't outsource the education of your children to the government unless you want the sort of product that the government is going to produce. Or as one pastor said, we cannot be surprised when we send our kids to Caesar for their education and be surprised when they come home as Romans. Because that's what's happening. So, time for us to buck up. You know, look at alternatives. And if you can't afford the alternative, which I understand, not everyone's in a position to be able to do that. But if your kid is still going to go into this environment, then you're going to have to spend a lot of extra time sitting down and having good conversations with them. And not just prescribing them, not just telling them that's not what we believe, but actually having good, worthwhile conversations where they're allowed to ask questions and you engage in actual civil discourse, discussion, and debate so that they can feel confident. Because right now they're walking into an environment where there's not just going to be academic consequences for not pushing the company narrative. There's going to be social consequences, and later on there's going to be economic consequences. Again, as Theodore Dalrymple said, a society of emasculated liars is really easy to control. Whether or not we become that sort of society is entirely up to us. I'm not doing it, and I'm not going to subject my kids to it. It is my job, first and foremost, to equip them to be able to go out and make their life everything it can be and to help other people along the way. And I don't see any way to do that that doesn't emphasize inherent human worth, individual liberty, and personal responsibility. All right. I'm going to go ahead and stop there. Again, we've got several more episodes like this coming up, because the pace at which the culture is just lurching to the left is incredible right now. And again, one of the objects of this podcast is to equip you to be able to, you know, understand what is going on, to be able to combat it with rational, well-thought-out arguments, and we want to continue to do that. We're also going to continue our series on some of the, you know, just really good conservative thinkers. Conservative thinkers, libertarian thinkers, classical liberalism. And again, when I say classical liberalism, it's that idea of what American conservatism and libertarianism is rooted in. We're going to focus more on that because, again, it's about equipping people to be able to make the argument and to also be able to make that argument not just through the discussions we have, not just through the words we say, but also how we live our life. So once again, thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time. Once again, thank you very much for listening. If you want to support the show, again, one of the best ways you can do it is by heading over to goodranchers.com with promo code Nick. You're going to get $15 off. You sign up for one of those subscriptions and you're going to get up to $480 of free meat with that subscription. You get to pick top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, bacon. It is all up to you. Plus, if you're looking for gifts to get for the people that are impossible to shop for, goodranchers.com also has gift boxes. You need to act quick. This is part of their overall Black Friday special. So head on over to goodranchers.com, use promo code Nick, and once again, thank you for listening.